Hello and welcome to the second No Big Two, the interview with my guest today, Sequoia Winston. This episode is brought to you by theheroeshideaway.com for all your geeky needs, from toys to comics to collectibles. Heroeshideaway.com, that's H-E-R-O-S, hideaway.com. Anyway, today I have Sequoia, who works here at Capital Comics in Raleigh. We've been trying to get this conversation going for a couple weeks now, and we were fortunate enough to free up some time. So, Sequoia, you want to tell people about yourself and why I decided to talk to you today?
I'm not sure why you want to talk to me today, but my name is Sequoia Winston, and you know, I work here at Capital Comics of Raleigh. I've been with the store roughly for about 16, 17 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't done much of anything for 16, 17 years.
Well, off and on. Right. I mean, you know, full-time, part-time. You know, I've had a couple of times throughout my stretch with the store, you know, just shopping here and not really working, but I've always been around to help out when they've been short staffed and stuff like that. But I've been shopping here. Well, I started at the Hillsborough Street store, but I've been coming to Capital Comics since I was about 11 or 12.
Wow.
So, yeah, very cool. A lot of history.
So what was it when you were 11 or 12 that pulled you to it? Do you remember from the early starts of the appeal for comics to a young reader?
Well, you know, when I was little, I didn't know there was such a thing as a comic book store. I mean, I discovered the Hillsborough Street store by random. It was just one day in the car with my mom, and we're just whizzing down Hillsborough Street, and I see this big sign in the window with Spider-Man, and I was like, I don't know what that is, but I need to go check that out. So, I mean, that was how I discovered this place. But as far as discovering the medium, I think it happened in about two phases, because, you know, like most kids, you know, you don't start off reading comic books unless someone introduces them to you. And, you know, my exposure to these characters came through the cartoon series, like, you know, Super Friends, right. Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. What else? You know, like they would show reruns of the old George Reeves Superman TV show. And I remember on HBO at the time, you know, this is like early 80s, HBO was showing like Superman the movie quite a bit. So I was always aware of characters like Batman, Superman, Spider-Man and such. But I didn't realize that they, you know, they were on more than just my TV screen.
Right.
I think the discovery came probably around fourth grade. I came across this book series. I don't know if it was published by Marvel or some other company, but there were like four books in the series, and each one was sort of like an introduction and a sort of a history, just, you know, on individual Marvel characters. And like I said, there were only four of them. So like, I remember reading one about solely about Captain America. There was one about Spider-Man, one about the Fantastic Four. The one in the series I never got to read was about the Hulk. But, I mean, it was like a really in-depth, like, intro to these characters, how their powers worked, you know, who their villains and allies were. You know, I had a couple of, you know, stories, you know, reprints of stories from, you know, some old, like, Kirby stuff. Like, I remember in the Captain America one, it was the one where he fights the Red Skull over the Cosmic Cube.
Right.
So, you know, that was my introduction. That was the first time I realized that, you know, hey, this stuff is outside of television and film. But that still didn't make me a comic book collector.
Right.
And I just remember, it's kind of weird, like, there was this one book, that was at the school library. And it was solely about, like, it was just an encyclopedia of, like, comic book superheroes. And, I mean, it talks about, like, you know, going all the way back to the Golden Age through the Silver Age and such. All these really obscure characters. I mean, stuff I never knew about, like the Green Llama, you know, Doc Savage. So that was sort of my introduction.
Right.
But I don't think I started reading comic books until I hit middle school. And this is probably about sixth or seventh grade. And, you know, in between that time, you know, there were trips to the drugstore, the convenience store, and, you know, I watched the G.I. Joe and Transformers cartoons. So, like, you know, if I saw a book with those logos, yeah, I'd pick them up. You know, I remember I liked Star Trek. You know, DC was doing the Star Trek comic back in the 80s, and I remember grabbing a random issue of that. But I didn't realize there was a process. Like, this stuff came out every month, and there was a place.
Yeah, you know, source material from which the cartoons and everything was pulling from. And
exactly.
It even had a longer continuity than the cartoons and the TV shows and things like that.
Yeah. But I think, you know, the moment of lightning striking was for me was probably about seventh grade. I was taking a photography class, and my teacher, God forgive me, I can't remember his name at this time. He had a poster with the cover to Batman: The Killing Joke, you know, where he's holding the camera, which was appropriate as a photography class. And I recognized, you know, the image being that of the Joker. But one day, we just had a free day in class, just kind of dig around and do nothing. And he was reading The Dark Knight Returns. And, you know, it's just one of those things where
there's something about that book that flips people's switch.
Mm-hmm.
It's something about that book that makes people realize there's more to this medium than they ever once believed before.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause, you know, I came upon him reading it, and I'm like, well, you know, what is this? What are you reading? And he's like, The Dark Knight Returns. And he, you know, flipped through a couple of pages, and he was showing me some images from it. And I just remember it blowing my mind, because, you know, my exposure to Batman and Superman, like I said, you know, George Reeves, Christopher Reeves, Super Friends, the old 60s Batman TV show. And it's like, it just blew my mind that, you know, why has Batman got gray hair? Like, mm-hmm. I could never, you know, I couldn't believe that, you know, Batman could get old.
Yeah. Where's Cesar Romero? Where's Adam West? Is not the same Batman.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, it just blew my mind. Like, I never thought these characters could get old. Or, you know, why is Batman fighting Superman? Like, I thought those dudes were friends. And it just freaked me out. And after that, you know, I mean, it was just so revelatory. But the thing was, I could not find a copy of it to save my life. And I mean, you know, this is probably about late 80s.
I could point you to some copies now. You got some copies on the wall.
Yeah. And keep in mind, like I said, this is the late 80s. So, right. You know, Batman the movie was on its way.
Sure.
So it was like just this, you know, all this stuff coming together at once. You know, I'm hitting that preteen phase, so the type of entertainment I liked, you know, was changing. My taste was changing. You know, I was, you know, my mom will say I'm a pretty even keeled guy, but I like to think, you know, I was developing a dark streak. You mm-hmm. know, you just need stuff to be a bit more intense when you're that age.
You get into your teenage angsts.
Exactly.
The same things just don't fill that cup the way, you know, something dark does. Yeah.
And I wasn't an angsty kid, but I mean, you know, I guess, yeah, there was the appeal of darkness.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, that book, that movie, all kind of come. And, you know, I mean, that was roughly around the same time. I remember we took a trip to Myrtle Beach for the summer, and I just picked up a random issue of X-Men. I don't remember the issue number. It was the one Sylvester drew, but it was like the cover was like purple and green. It was Wolverine crucified on the giant X.
Mm.
And I just remember, you know, seeing that cover, and it's like, oh my God, I don't know what this is, but I have to have it. And I mean, you know, we were down there for like a week, and I just read that book over and over and over again. So yeah, I mean, that was probably when it hit me. It was probably about age, you know, 11, 12, somewhere in that, you know, in that time period.
So with this medium, I've kind of been thinking about how one gets involved. There's different reasons one would be interested in this medium, because it's not a novel. It's not a coloring book. It's not It's not a movie. Mm-hmm. It's not, it's its own thing.
Right.
I've written papers on, you know, the views of comic art and why in many ways it's not held up the same we would gallery pieces and stuff, and whether or not that's right or wrong. But, you know, I kind of decided that there was, and there's probably a million reasons why people ultimately end up coming to comics. Mm-hmm. But three major reasons I saw was for the writing, mm-hmm. the art, and the readership.
Right.
So I guess if you're a writer, if you're someone who just enjoys sitting down and writing, what do you believe some of the appeals for a writer to engage themselves in comics? The short form story, the ability to add continuity to mythos?
You know, the funny thing is when you look at the early days of comic books, or even going back to the pulps, those guys didn't want to be there. You know,
right.
I mean, the pay was terrible, and the recognition was awful. I mean, you know, basically, it's like being a legitimate journalist and, you know, working for a tabloid.
Right.
Or seeing yourself as a legitimate journalist. I mean, you know, either you are or you aren't, but either you're good at your craft or you're not. But, you know, those guys hate it, and they were always trying to get out of it and, you know, become, you know, well-respected science fiction or horror writers. So I think, you know, what we know as the comic writers of today, I think it's one of those things, those guys had to grow up, you know, realizing that there is such a thing as comics. And it was something that, you know, they were around, something they enjoyed as kids. And it's an option, you know, right. It's a viable option. You don't have to, you know, be Louis L'Amour or Stephen King. You know, you can be Stan Lee or, you know, Len Wein. You know, it's just one of those things where it's a third option. You know, writers either grow up wanting to be, you know, novelist or screenwriters. You know, the third option is being a comic book writer.
Do you think there's an appeal to it in the sense that when you sit down to write your novelette, you're playing in your own mind of how things look and feel and the expressions, and you're building the world in your mind. And when you hand your book to a reader, they read it and their interpretations kind of completely different. Like they're now playing in their own mind and setting up the scene the way they want to see it. But when it translates over to an artist, the artist then interprets the scene and the characters the way, in almost a more a collaborative between writer and artist. And so maybe some of the appeal is the writer does not necessarily allow the reader to make up their own world. It's like, no, I made this world for a reason. Me and the artist sat down and we talked about it. There's a reason it looks this way. There's a reason it feels this way. There's maybe more of a control for the writer.
Saying like it's like, you know, it's less pliable than, say, reading a novel where you envision those characters looking a certain way. Like I might read something like, you know, what's the last book I read? Like, you know, you might read something like Hannibal, but instead of, if I had never seen Silence of the Lambs, then I wouldn't necessarily envision Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter. I might see Udo Kier or, you know, just some other random person, maybe the guy who lives down the street from me. Like, you're saying basically with comic books, this is the product, you know, this is how I envisioned it to a T. Well, you know, I gotta imagine that, you know, a writer understands that even though, you know, and basically that comes down to that whole, you know, Marvel style of writing or scripting to, you know, the, I guess, non-Marvel style. You know, some writers are able to hand over that control to their artist.
Right.
They may not be that specific about how they want things to look. But, I mean, you know, you take, I mean, I'm sure you've read an Alan Moore script before, sure. seen it. I mean, like, he throws down, you know, all this, you know, minute detail. And I still think, even though he may describe to a T what he wants on every single panel and every single page,
right?
What the artist ultimately produces isn't going to be 100% how Alan or someone like right. him may have visioned that scene playing in their head. That's why I think as a writer, if you have some say so in who draws your book, you have to have faith in that artist's style. And that, you know, there's going to be that type of that synergy, you know, that, hey, you know, I'm thinking this, you know, how do you feel about, oh, yeah, you know, we're seeing stuff the same way, you know, even
it's got to be a team effort.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. You know, I feel like with anything, whether you're, you know, a screenwriter or a television writer, you got to realize that even though you may put it down on paper a certain way, it's going to come out looking, you know, unless you're just doing everything yourself.
Right.
It's not going to quite come out looking exactly like you want it. You know, you've got your straight up comic creators like Jeff Smith, Paul Pope, you know, guys who everything they write, they draw, and everything they draw, they write. You know, I think those are the only guys who are ultimately 100% going to be satisfied.
Right. I know Neil Adams does that time and time again.
Yeah.
Mostly with short run stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And what do you think the appeal is for the readers? I know I always get a little high when I finish one because mm-hmm. I feel like that same kind of accomplishment when I read like a, you know, 600-page novel of, I just read a book in 7 minutes. I'm super fast. Because personally speaking, I'm not a strong reader. I was never a strong reader. When I was a kid, you know, my parents would sit me down to read out loud, and I would stutter and stammer over my words, but I would also break out sweating.
Mm-hmm.
It was that difficult for me. You know, I had things like comic books to kind of help me read faster and kind of focus on the imagery would give the scene. So my mind didn't have to make it up,
right?
Which just allowed my mind to focus on the words that were written.
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of those things where some, you know, that's always stuck with me. It was an interview in the Comics Journal where I think it was Kurt Busiek and Gary Groth, and they were talking about, you know, independent small press comics versus, you know, mainstream comics. And, you know, Gary Groth has always been, you know, strong proponent of, you know, the little guy in comic books. You know, he's always tried to push the medium more towards, you know, some people will call highbrow comics, you know, right. stuff like, Fun Home or Love and Rockets or Miles. And Kurt Busiek said, you know, that's all well and good. There should be a place for those types of comics. But the thing is, no one starts off reading that stuff. Everyone right. starts off with X-Men.
Nobody starts with Ghost World.
No, yeah. Nobody does. I mean, unless, you know, maybe you're an adult
right.
and you're like, I'm going to read a comic. You know, yeah, you might decide to read, From Hell.
Because
mm-hmm. you've gotten tired of reading, you know, horror novels. You're like, oh, let me indulge this. But I mean, comics is one of those things that most folks who stick with it or still doing, they started off as kids.
Right.
And it's a good and a bad thing because, you know, unfortunately, the medium is still viewed as being strictly for kids. But I've found there are grown-ups that have no capacity for reading a comic book whatsoever. And it's funny because, you know, it's something we've practiced. We've had our whole lives. We, you know the flow.
Right.
Like, you start in the upper left-hand corner, work to the right down. And, you know, and there's just some folks like they, I can't tell where this stuff is happening. This doesn't right. make any sense. And it's like, you know, come on. It's like, it's not that hard. But, yeah, there's just some folks who can't. They just don't know how they work.
Right.
Yeah. You know, and it's not like it's a machine or anything.
Yeah.
But, and I just went off on a tangent. But no, So, I mean, it's one of those things where I think the appeal for most folks reading comics is it's something they've always been doing.
Right.
I mean, I think with any kid, if you ask them why they start reading comics, it's either, you know, the character. I think that's the initial interest.
Of course.
And then the art. You know, the art is the biggest thing. I mean, it's the first thing you see. You know, and as, when you're young, your taste isn't as well developed. You know, you really don't know the difference between a good writer and a bad writer. But hopefully, as you read this stuff over time, you know, your taste starts to evolve. And, you know, you can tell a good artist from a bad artist. You can tell who knows good sequential art from bad sequential art, you know, storytelling and such. And I think it's one of those things, once you're initiated, it's just something you always stick with. But, I mean, as far as, like, people getting into comics, like, you know, who have never done it before right now, you know, like, right now, I got a lot of folks coming up and asking me, like, oh, have you got Guardians of the Galaxy? And, you know, it's, I know their interest has been piqued because of that trailer. Like, I have a lot of folks asking about, you know, the Winter Soldier, you know, because that movie's about to come out. You know, I don't ask folks, you know, I've had a couple of, you know, adults come in here and just say, hey, you know, I'm looking to start reading comics, you know, what do you recommend? And the first thing I have to ask them is, well, I know you didn't just wake up this morning and say, I'm going to read a comic book. You know, like you had to have heard something or talked to someone. Yeah, exactly. There's some kind of impetus that made you go out and seek out a comic book store. So, I mean, everyone's coming at this stuff from different angles and at different points in their lives. But
I will say what I've noticed by doing the No Big Two and just focusing on more independent titles and, you know, the off-brand titles is the question when they say, I want to start reading comics, where should I start?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the best question to ask is, well, what do you currently read?
Right.
I mean, are you into mystery novels? Right. Are you into romance novels? And if you actually, you know, look at your Images and your Dark Horses and your Onis and your other brands, you'll find more stories for people who, you know, don't necessarily want the cowls.
Right.
I actually, it's funny that you mentioned that. I just had a coworker say, you know, you and Jacob always talk about comics and stuff. You know, where do I start?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, Dark Knight, you got to start with Dark Knight. And then he goes, well, I don't know anything about it. And I'm like, well, do you want to like read current comics? Cause then you got to start with the Court of Owls and things like that. And then I kind of stopped and thought, well, no, it's really based on like, what do you like to read?
Right.
You know, I could give you a million Batman things to read. I could give you a bunch of X-Men stuff to read, but what is it you like to read?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, and it seems like such an intimidating and daunting task for a lot of folks. You know, I always have to ask, like, what's your favorite movie or what's your favorite book? You know, who are your favorite writers? Because I feel like that's a good, you know, that's a good starting point. Some people, they like, cyber thrillers, you know, they might like something by Michael Crichton. So, you know, I might say, well, hey, you know, you might like this Hacktivist book that's coming out. Or maybe you like something by Warren Ellis. I mean, I had one guy come in here. He was very specific. And he was looking for sort of near future military thriller action type of books. And I was like, well, okay, I think I kind of got a feel for what, you know, genre you're looking for. And I was able to recommend stuff like Infinite Horizon and The Activity. And he seemed pretty satisfied with that. And I think that's the thing. You know, there's so many folks just don't realize this stuff is so much more than
capes and cowls.
Exactly. Yeah. It's so bigger than Batman and Superman. But, you know, but it's also funny. I think the thing is also I get folks that come in and they really restrict themselves as far as like how they're going to ingest this stuff. Like, only want single issues. And that's fine. You know, it's their prerogative. But, you know, I have to warn them. I'm like, well, you know, here's the thing. If you decide you're only going to buy this run of books via single issues and you're trying to go back to number one, you may not find number one. You may not find the first year of this stuff. And you may be hunting for a good long time to complete that collection just so you can actually sit down and start reading it. You know, some folks are kind of there. I don't know why they do not want to deal with trade paperbacks or graphic novels.
I think those are great places to get caught up.
Yeah.
Maybe the cover price seems a little daunting at first when you're looking at $17 versus a $3 issue.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to get a full, complete story and you don't want to have to keep checking in week after week or month after month, trade paperbacks is the best way to do that. I think there's something about the collectability of the single issues. But I feel like if you want the story and just the story, then you might as well just stick with the trades.
But, you know, I might get yelled at for saying this, but collectability, man, is such a dead notion. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, as a personal matter, it's fine. I think it's great. It's well and good. I mean, if you have something, you can collect anything. You can collect Beanie Babies, you can collect Pokemon, you can collect dust. I mean, there's a lot of things you can collect. You know, one time my thing was I collected comics that had parodies of the Charles Atlas Hero of the Beach. And I mean, I know that's such a weird specific thing, but like if I ever came across something, well, you know, they're making fun of Charles Atlas. You know, I would buy those. But the thing is, like, if anyone thinks the speculator market is coming back,
If people necessarily collect in hopes to one day sell their treasure trove, I don't know if that's necessarily the case, or if it's more like basketball cards or baseball cards, where it's they're easy to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
You have your collection,
right?
And for every, you know, every once in a while, it's fun to go back and relive those buying purchases or those reading purchases.
Right.
I know with my collection, personally, I mean, I have, this is going to sound lame in the sense of how very few comics I actually do have. more than the average person, but less than like the average comic collector. I have only two long boxes, you know, so roughly 500 comics.
Yeah.
And honestly, I just restarted collecting probably about the time I started shopping here, which was, what, 2 years ago?
That sounds about right.
I have this, like, on-again, off-again relationship with comics because, you know, when I approached it in high school before college, I was collecting them because I wanted the story. And more so, I was thinking, well, I'm going to hold on to, you know, this Civil War series. This Civil War series will take off. And that's the wrong way to go about it.
Yeah.
You know, you collect it because you enjoy the medium, not because you want to turn it around 10 years from now and make, you know, $5 on top of the, you know, $20 investment that you made.
Yeah.
Especially when you're talking about inflation.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you bought it for $20 today. 10 years from now, you sell it for $25. You're really selling it for that same $20 that you bought it for.
Exactly.
So I agree with you in the sense that it's the wrong way to go about buying individual issues.
Well, you know, I get a lot of little kids come in and like, oh, I want to get Batman number one. And it's like, I was like, you don't have to start at number one. You know, I was like, you just start. And I mean, I guess the sad thing is, you know, now how comic books are written compared to how, like, you know, when, you know, we were younger and growing up, you know, you could start at any random issue. I mean, you know, like I said, I picked up that one issue of X-Men. And, you know, it told me enough to know what was going on in the context of the issue. And I knew that there was more that was going to happen afterwards. I wasn't able for a while, you know, I wasn't able to go back and, you know, kind of, branch out and fill in those gaps, you know, find out, you know, the follow up on that story, but then also what happened before. But you got to start somewhere. And I feel like, you know, too many people, they limit themselves as far as what they're going to accept or, you know, where they're going to start. And it's like, just get something. Just be brave and pick something up and, you know, be open-minded enough to like it or, you know, honest with yourself that you hate it and you won't buy any more copies of it. But, you know, start somewhere. Get in where you can fit in.
Right.
And I mean, you know, it's not as easy these days because everything is written in these really tight six issue arcs. And you know, it's like you're going to be lost if you pick up part four of a six-part series.
I don't think anybody wants to be late to the party.
No, they don't. You know, and that's understandable. And but that's why I try to steer people towards, you know, trade paperbacks or start read this arc. This is probably the best thing of this book that's been written in a good long time. And this will, if you read this and like it, you know, you'll know whether or not you want to keep reading this character and such. But, you know, it's a lot harder to just jump on.
Yeah. I think the big two, Marvel and DC, have realized that. I know the last couple weeks, Marvel's been pushing out a bunch of number ones. And
true.
They're just hop on points, you know. I think it's for, they realize the market has a new generation of readers because of the hype of the movies and the TV shows, and they want people to not feel late to the party.
Right.
And I embrace that. I think that's great. Continuity is changing, so a lot of the diehard fans get upset, but you know.
But that's the thing about this stuff. It's always changing. Because, I mean, I was one kid in particular I had in here. And, I mean, when he said he wanted to start reading Spider-Man number one, I mean, he wanted to go back to the 60s.
Right.
And I was like, you sure you don't want to start with Superior Spider-Man? Or maybe, you know,
Ultimate pick up Spider-Man or something.
Yeah, or something like that. Something a bit more current. And, I mean, he thought in his mind that if he didn't start with the very beginning and introduction of Spider-Man, that, you know, he was just going to miss out on stuff. And I had to tell him, I was like, look, man, this stuff, like, it turns over every few years or so. So, you know, just because something, you know, is this way with this character doesn't mean it's always going to stay that way or always was that way. I mean, it is constant. It's a soap opera.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, like, you know, this week Erica Chandler is blind and in a wheelchair. And then when you come back next week, she'll be perfectly fine. You know, it was just that story they were telling for that time. You know, just to have something happening. So, I mean, you know, and that's the thing, you know, thing is, you know, folks just have to be willing to, you know, try something different. And yeah, I mean, you know, Marvel's doing a great thing right now with a lot of these, you know, not necessarily, you know, canceling a book and starting over with the number one, but saying, hey, this is a good jumping on point.
Right.
I wish DC did more of that.
Well, they did, you know, back in 2011, they did one giant reset, you know, with the new 52. And it seems like currently they're ending a couple titles. And I think new titles will spawn in the wake of the couple books that they're ending.
Yeah, but, you know, I wish they weren't so married to the idea that they have to have 52 titles. I mean, I don't understand the point of that. Like, I mean, I understand, you know, this whole initiative was to battle Marvel, who was just like, you know, like they were just spreading themselves out. And they're like, we're going to take up as much space on the shelf as possible. Like, yeah, you know, this book comes out once a month. No, and now it comes out every other week. And, you know, like, characters, you know, had umpteen different titles. I mean, and they're trying to fight that. I understand, but it's doing so. It's part of the reason why I dropped Marvel, because, you know, I was reading Invincible Iron Man and I was like, this is a good book, but this isn't, you know, worth reading two times a month, especially when it seemed like every issue nothing was happening. You know, this is a big 8-issue arc. Like, you could have told this story in 3 issues.
Sure. They're just trying to sell another book.
Exactly. You know? And it's just,
well,
like,
I think that might be one of the, especially for new readers, one of the reasons why they should take a chance on some of the lesser known publishers, because there's more miniseries. And because there's every week there's an issue one. There's always a starting point for somebody. Some of the drawbacks is you never know when an issue two is going to come out. It's hard to meet their deadlines and you know, meet their monthly quotas and whatnot. I think that's one of the appeals to why, you know, people who are new to the medium should jump on.
Well, I mean, I can sell an independent or small press book. You know, I can convince somebody, an adult, a lot easier than I could a little kid. Because one, I mean, the problem with a lot of comics in general is that so little of it is written for, you know, kids. I mean, you know, 13-year-olds and up, you know, it's fine. But anybody younger than that, like, there's not a lot for you. So, I mean, I couldn't, I mean, first out of all the indie stuff is trying to find something that's appropriate, but then also just something that would appeal. Cause like I said, you know, the kids that come in here, you know, they want Spider-Man, they want Batman, they want Wolverine. I mean, that's the stuff they're familiar with.
Right.
And it's, that's the only place they're willing to start. You know, they're kind of like me back in the 80s, influenced by what they watch on television. You know, that's their intro to this stuff. And, you know, their taste isn't quite as developed.
Yeah.
But hopefully as they get older, you know, like I said, they will be reading something like, you know, what's a Deadly Class.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just too much. I feel like it's a bit much for them to try and take in right now. Because I remember, God, like being at a Walden Books and coming across an issue of Watchmen, you know, back in the day when I was trying to
Walden Books.
Yes, and B. Dalton. Yeah, I love, yeah.
Remember when every mall had a bookstore in it?
Yes. Yes, I did.
A bookstore and a toy store. Now you go and all it is clothes stores and drives me nuts. Really yeah. No reason to go to a mall anymore. Sorry,
no,
I digress.
You know, like I remember coming across the issue of Watchmen and just like, you know, what is this crap? You know, like it, none of the characters were familiar. The art wasn't what I was used to. I mean, I was always into that really dynamic style of artwork. And Dave Gibbons, I mean, I appreciate him now
right.
as an adult, but, you know, as an 11-year-old, just like, eh, this doesn't look very exciting.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that just was not going to appeal to me.
So we won't get Watchmen Babies V's for Vacation.
God.
What was that? That was,
that was Simpsons. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, wasn't that actually Alan Moore?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nah.
Well, we're seeing a little bit of that. I know they got Little Hellboy.
Yes. And, Itty Bitty Hellboy.
I think, I don't know if it was just a joke, but they were doing a little Red Sonja.
Yes, that's Dynamite. They did, like, was it Little Red Sonja, Little Sonja, was it Little Battlestar Galactica,
right.
Bionic Kids, and I think there's like a Little Evil Ernie, or I think it's just Little Ernie. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't look all zombie.
Yeah, I would love to. I mean, I would love to see more of that kind of stuff kind of pop up. You know, whether it be from Dynamite or some of the others. I know a lot of kid comics are more featured online, probably due to the fact that they knew kids want Spider-Man, they want Batman. Digital is less of an investment
right.
on the printing end and stuff. So, I mean, a lot of the kids' comics and kids just live online anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where we're finding a lot of the younger readers flocking to. But I would like to see some more issues on the stand that, you know, young readers, grown-up readers, they can all enjoy.
No, I agree. I mean, you know, you know, it's just kind of hard to put my finger on it. Because like I said, I mean, you know, it's a good time and a bad time for kids' comics. You know, because My Little Pony and Adventure Time, I mean, that has just been a huge boom
right.
For kids' comics. I mean, you know, I think those are a couple of our best sellers in terms of kids' comics. I don't really see it trickling down as much to some of the other stuff. I mean, you know, some kids will pick up, like, Hero Bear and the Kid.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, you know, the common scenario I find is just like, it's the kid is the driving force. The kid is like, I want to go get a comic book. Or sometimes it's a parent who used to read comic books and they're trying to steer their kids toward it. But kids are just going to like what they like.
Right.
And you cannot convince them otherwise. Like, you know, I had one family in here and I think initially they were trying to find like a Batman comic. And I mean, you know, the only Batman kids comic I can really recommend is Beware the Batman, but the kid was just drawing the Sonic. And, you know, you got two Sonic books. You got Sonic and the Hedgehog and Sonic Universe. And I was like, hey, you know, two Sonic comics, you know, you want both of these? And he's like, no, I just want the one Sonic book. And I was like, well, why not the other? And no rhyme, no reason. He didn't want both of them, just the one. And it's like, well, okay, you know, that's fine. But, you know, like I said, the kids, they know Batman, they know Superman, that's what they want. And, you know, in the case of DC, I think the dumbest thing they ever did was cancel Tiny Titans. I mean, that's the one I get the most requests for. But, I mean, I think it's the most... It's the one with the most general appeal to both boys and girls. And it's really great for really small kids. But I find the most frustrating thing is, especially in the case of boys, it's that tween period. Like when they hit about 8 on up to like 11 or 12.
The Young Justice years.
Exactly. That book would be perfect for them. Right. But, you know, it's just... You know, I want Batman, but I don't want to read Batman Brave and the Bold because that's for my younger brother. Or, you know, I need something with a little bit more of an edge, but not too dark.
Right.
And maybe I'm failing somehow, but there's just, you know, not a lot I feel comfortable with.
Right.
I feel like Marvel stuff to some degree is a bit more, a little more family friendly.
Sure.
And then some of the DC is just a little too image circa 1993 now. You know,
well, they got a lot of former Image people there. So,
which by the way, I was watching. I gotta loan you this copy, but I was watching this documentary last night, The Image Revolution.
Oh yeah,
yeah. You know, documentary just about the whole start and. Well, not really decline. I mean, that there's that period in there. It's like, you know, Behind the Music. There's always that period where things go sour. But, yeah, it was about the whole startup of Image Comics and stuff. And, oh, man, like, that just took me back. I mean, it's kind of embarrassing, you know, like, God, I actually like this crap.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's where you start.
I mean, I think back to my childhood, and I was actually recently just reading a Greg Colupo Angela, mm-hmm. Angela 1-3, yeah. So like written by Neil Gaiman, and it just dawned on me like, oh man, I didn't even realize that Greg Colupo is the artist that I was imitating while learning to draw.
Yes,
like it, and you know. Him and Jim Lee were the two that I would lock myself in my bedroom and draw and try to mimic the way they drew.
Jim Lee,
they were the details that me and my friends were talking about. Mm. Yeah, and you know they're still going. Only now they're the heads of their industry, and that's probably also why DC is a lot darker than it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's just funny. I mean, you think about how influential that company has been.
Right.
I mean, like, you know, they made it possible to have the big three.
Right.
Now, but I mean, you know, they touch on in their documentary, they touch on like that kind of fallow period after, you know, he says he quit, but, you know, they say they kicked him out. But, you know, Rob Liefeld was out, and then Jim Lee sold Wildstorm to DC. And, you know, they didn't have – that. You know, they took the bulk of Image's titles with them. And, you know, I found, like, in during that time period, that's where they got, like, a lot more interesting and a lot more experimental. And that's when they started bringing in more independent and small press stuff.
Right.
You know, and a lot of folks don't realize, like, Robert Kirkman with The Walking Dead, you know, and before the show even came about, I mean, like, really kept that, his stuff really kept that company afloat. And Jim Valentino, I mean, did just great work, you know, getting all this, you know, new talent in. And I mean, it's just real fantastic. And then, like, you know, you look at what it is right now. I mean, majority of what I'm reading right now is from Image.
Right.
And it's not to say I don't like superhero comics anymore, but, you know, for me, it was just one of those things where I know at least with a lot of the Image stuff, I'm getting something that's a bit more unique and there's a lot more spontaneity. You know, I know Batman is never going to die. And if he does die, he's not going to stay dead.
Right. Walking Dead, you...
Yeah.
Who, you know, anybody could die. Everybody's fair game. And you.
Exactly.
It's a little more freeing.
Yeah.
The story structure.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what I'm going to get when I pick up an issue.
Right.
And that's, you know, exciting and kind of nice. to just be surprised by what I'm going to be reading. And I mean, I joke with folks in here, like, you know, in case of Spider-Man, like, oh, what do you think's going to happen in this new storyline? I was like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm pretty sure Spider-Man is going to punch somebody in the face. I mean, like,
he's, you know, say thwip.
Yeah, exactly. There's going to be a lot of thwipping going on. But, you know, and every once in a while, you know, like something new will arise. Like, you know, I'm liking Forever Evil. I'm waiting for it to end, but
yeah,
you know, that's pretty good stuff. But, you know, I'm just more interested in the small press and the indie stuff. But you know, I'm trying to go a little bit deeper, but then I've got my threshold. Like, yeah, you know,
can't read it all.
You know, there's something out there for everybody, and some stuff's going to appeal to you and some stuff ain't.
Well, I think that pretty much sums it up, though. Yeah. Perfect. Any final thoughts? Any anything you plug in? Got any projects going on?
As far as the store, what have we got
coming? Anything on? Personal?
Anything personal? No, you know, if you're listening to this, you know, because, you know, any people listening to this, if they're fans of Cabal Comics, you know, I always implore you to, you know, check out our Facebook page and like us. Please come to the actual store,
yeah,
and buy some stuff. You know, we're open, you know, 7 days a week, open till 8 on Wednesdays, because that's when the new stuff comes out. Saturdays, what, 10 to 6, Sundays, 2 to 6. I'm here on the weekend, so if you want to come see me, check me out. Or, you know, one of my other lovely co-workers there on the weekdays. You know, please come check us out on Free Comic Book Day.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up pretty soon, isn't it?
We got a couple more months, but yes, it's going to be a blowout.
Sweet. You
know? Got some artists. And
oh, and let me go ahead and say, Free Comic Book Day does not mean all the comics are free. There's specific free comics that are given by the distributioner. Those are free.
Which a lot of people don't realize that,
I feel like you have to kind of explain that to people.
Yeah.
No, it's not a free for all day. It's a...
Yes, these books are for free. You know, just little samples.
You mean I could get an Amazing Fantastic number one for free?
No, you cannot. You can get what we have on the table. We'll have stickers and pens, little doodads.
And it's a great, great family day for kids and stuff.
It is. And, you know, it's been real nice just to kind of see it explode over the years. I mean, it's just, you know, I remember last year, man, like, it was a fire hazard,
yeah,
is what it was. Yeah. And you know, I asked, like, a bunch of people, like, how did you hear about this? Because I always feel like, you know, when it comes to anything comic books, you know, the people who know, the people in the know are going to show up. But all these other folks that you just, these strangers, like, where, you know, and they were talking about it on the news or just heard it word of mouth. So hopefully we can have an even bigger turnout this year than we did last.
Definitely. All right, well, that about sums it up. I want to go ahead and give a shout-out to Phil Wilson, who does the intro music for the podcast, both this one and Damn Art Majors. If you like what you're hearing, you know, let us know. Shout it out in the comments. And follow No Big Two Comic Review on Twitter at NB2CR. That's NB2CR. It's so easy to say. Once again, thank you to Sequoia here, and I'm Adam Buckafusco, and I don't have a sign-off yet. I need to work on a sign-off.
Stay classy.
Stay classy, Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. Have a good one.
Internet.